listener production.
A warning. This episode of Future Women Leadership Series references domestic violence and sexual assault. Please listen with care.
Hi, I'm Helen McCabe, the founder of FW. One of the most exciting things we do is our annual FW Leadership Summit. This year's summit was all about reset, to rediscover who you are and what that means for your work and career. If you couldn't make it, don't worry. I'm bringing you the next best thing to being in the room, sharing all the highlights and practical advice from this year's event. Anne Summers is a figure synonymous with the women's rights movement in Australia. For over 50 years, Anne's books, journalism, policy work, and public advocacy have illuminated the ongoing struggle for equality and envisaged a path forward for women. Recorded live at the FW Leadership Summit, Anne reflects on her experience as a leader on the front lines of the women's liberation movement, providing a blueprint for the next generation.
In addressing the theme today, which is reset, I think as I read the program, sort of more or less about how we've recovered from COVID. When COVID was at its, I was going to say height, probably that's not the right word, but at its worst, at its depth, I was living in New York and where things were very, very serious and were multiple deaths every day. We actually had a refrigerated truck of bodies at the end of our street because the hospital morgues just couldn't cope. I used to turn on the television and see or on social media and see people in Sydney strolling around parks, drinking wine, having little picnics and complaining about being locked down. I thought, the way they do things in Sydney is a bit different from the way they do things in New York. So anyway, I've decided I don't want to really address COVID. I want to go a lot further back in time, and I've entitled my remarks Then and Now, and I will get to my reset at the end of it. But the then I'm referring to is the world that I walked into when I left school, which was, I'm not going to tell you when, you can figure it out. You can figure it out, it's a long time ago. But I just want to make a few points about what the world was like for women like me back then and how it's changed, the extent to which the changes have been good, the extent to which the changes have been beneficial, the extent to which we still have so many more things to do, but how we are in so much better a position now to do them than we were when I was 16, when I left school. The first thing I'd say about women back then is that we were invisible. That women were basically confined to the home. My mother had six children, so the only time she went out was to go to the shops or take the kids to school, occasionally go out with her husband for a night out. But basically, you didn't see women in many places. You saw them at the shops. I went to a Catholic school, so I saw the nuns. If you had to go to hospital, you'd see nurses. But basically, that was it. There weren't women in any of the multitude of jobs you see us doing today. And when women tried to get into these jobs, as I'll get to in a moment, they weren't exactly welcomed with open arms. Back then, there were no women in politics, or virtually none. I mean, the Whitlam government, which was elected in 1972, a great reforming government, did a lot of things for women, put the pill on the PBS. It supported equal pay, supported childcare. It really brought Australia into the modern world as far as women were concerned. But there was not a single woman in that government. So all of the things that were done as a result of women's advocacy and the support that received from the male members of Parliament. If you visited Parliament House, this is the old Parliament House I'm referring to, not the big one on the hill now. If you visited Parliament House and you needed to go to the bathroom, well, they had bathrooms for senators and for members, and that was it. And all the senators were men and all the members were men. So if you needed to go to the toilet, you had to go down to the dungeon somewhere and find one that said the word women on the front. So women back then were largely invisible because we weren't doing the multitude of jobs that women are doing now. And when they started to, it was ridiculous. For example, they eventually let a few women into the police force, but the women had to wear skirts and they had to carry their guns in their handbags. So I can, you can just picture it, you know, chasing the bad guy down the street in your skirt, heels, handbag, where's that bloody gun, you know, amongst them. So let's say they weren't treated very seriously. The second thing is we were confined. We were very confined, not only in our heads, the ideology of femininity and what, you know, what women should be was very strong. It really dominated our lives. We were supposed to be a certain type of woman. We were supposed to be confined. We were supposed to be dominated by the men in our lives. We had to wear girdles. It was a very, very tight elastic thing that you had to put on, had little suspenders attached to it to put your stockings on. And it made sure that not only were you confined physically and couldn't breathe properly, it did give you a flat stomach, I'll say that much for it, but it was extremely uncomfortable and you didn't have the freedom that we have now. The other thing was nice girls didn't use tampons. So when I was growing up, you know, I asked my mother about, could I get some tampons? And she was just horrified. So I won't go into all the gory details there, but you can imagine, and this is before pads had sticky stuff on the back of them. So, and the third thing was the number of women working, as I've mentioned, was not great. And the women who did work, working class women, of course, have always worked, but the majority of women who did work were working in undervalued and underpaid jobs. But what was starting to happen then, and I was, guess I was part of this wave, we started going to university. We started studying. So you had this group of women coming up through the ranks who actually were educated, and that was creating demands and desires and ambitions, and yet all the gates were closed. So that basically is what led to women's liberation, as it used to be called then, feminism, as we now call it, and setting our agenda, saying what we wanted, what we needed in order to be able to be full participants in the world today. And during that time, this, we're talking about the 70s now, or the 60s initially, where the pill was invented, that changed everything. But then became the institutions that helped make our lives better, or were supposed to. We had the family law changes whereby you didn't, you know, you could get divorced more easily. And of course that's gone bad on us over the years, and we need to change that again. That's very, very tragic what's happened to the family law system. But it was meant to be a good law, it was meant to be a good change, and it was meant to protect women. And that's gone off the rails. We got the Sex Discrimination Act in 1984, and that was just, that changed everything. It made it unlawful to discriminate against you if you're a woman, if you were pregnant. But anyway, everything had to change because no one could discriminate against you in employment, in provision of services, that meant in renting, in giving you an apartment, whatever, because of your gender. And then later on we had paid parental leave, and that was, Australia was the second last country in the developed world to have paid parental leave. We now take it for granted, but it was a huge, it was called maternity leave back then, it was a huge thing that suddenly women were able to take time off and not lose their jobs. What had happened in the past, up until 1966, women who worked in the public service, who worked in banks, who worked in insurance companies, basically all the white-collar jobs that were available to women back then, up until 1966, required women to leave their employment if they got married. Not if they got pregnant, but if they got married. And that meant a whole generation of women just were completely wiped out of the ability to develop careers and to advance. So things started to go really well with all of these changes, particularly with the Sex Discrimination Act, and suddenly women could do anything. Suddenly, and a lot of things came from that. Women police could allow to wear pants. You know, they could put their guns on their holsters, take them out of their handbags. In fact, they stopped carrying handbags. And the Queen and Margaret Thatcher, I think, were the two holdouts to that fashion. But we all know we don't need handbags when we're doing that sort of a job. But with all of this liberation, with all of these changes and with all these opportunities came things that we didn't see coming. And I guess the thing that we didn't see coming was that there would be resistance. I mean, who would have thought that we wouldn't be welcome in the world of work? Who would have thought that there might be resentment? I remember when I was running the Office of the Status of Women back in the 80s, there was huge resistance to married women working. And the resistance was, or the argument was, the argument that was put by employers was that married women were taking the jobs of teenage boys. I mean, as if we have one of the most gender-segregated workforces in the universe, and there is no way in which women, married women, were going to be taking these jobs. But that was an example of the hostility and the resentment. And what we soon found was that resentment was expressed in pretty horrible, crude, material terms. We had to invent the term sexual harassment. We didn't know it before. We invented it because it was real. And it was a direct result of women going into the workforce and being treated badly by co-workers. It was even worse for women who pioneered jobs in blue-collar areas, such as women who worked at BHP in the steel mills in Wollongong in Newcastle, women who worked in the water board, women who worked in traditionally male jobs and who had the courage to become pioneers working in those areas. And they were treated shockingly. I mean, the type of physical, sexual harassment barely covers it. There was violence. There were all sorts of horrible things done to them. Those women went to court over this and they won. And these were really significant victories because it was a process of we had to fight our way into the workforce and we had to fight to be able to stay there. We had to fight to be able to get decent conditions. We're still fighting to get equal pay. I mean, for heaven's sake, how many years is it going to take? You know, I remember when Gough Whitlam got into power in 1972, one of his first actions was to intervene in a federal case supporting equal pay. Well, that was 1972. What is it now? 2024, and we still don't have it. The other resistance we encountered that we didn't expect was political rollback, you know, particularly during the 90s when we had a government that was very conservative and which basically thought women should live behind the white picket fence. And there were moves made during those years, the 90s, under the Howard government, to particularly using the tax system, making us pay more taxes, making it hard to retain full earnings and work, making childcare almost impossible, getting rid of all of the support systems in the bureaucracy, such as the Women's Bureau. And it was a really, really bad time for women. And it had at the same time, they introduced big payments for having babies. So there was a message there, girls. What do you want? Go to work, be treated like shit, or stay home and get paid to have a kid? So crude message, I would have thought. And unfortunately, it worked. And the women's workforce participation rate went down. I think we're still recovering from those years. It is now, you know, over 20 years ago, however long. In addition to the political rollback, we had outright discrimination, and we still do. I mean, I can't tell you the number of friends I have who have been sacked for being pregnant or being sacked while they're on maternity leave. It is completely against the law, and yet major companies still do it all the time. And this is one of the frustrations that even when we have the law on our side, if we don't necessarily have the culture on our side and we don't have the support, what is a lone woman to do? She's on maternity leave. She rings up and says, I'll be back next week. And they say, oh, well, actually, we've restructured your position. And so there isn't a position for you to come. Mind you, we're not getting rid of you. We'll find you something, of course, but it'll be, you know, more junior and less pay and we won't make it easy for you. The other form of resistance that has occurred, apart from the physical resistance I talked about, the political rollback, the outright discrimination, has been the sexual revenge. And we all know the rise of rape culture, revenge porn, stealthing, all kinds of horrible behaviours that have been very brilliantly documented by Chanel Contes in her new book, which you haven't read it, I'd highly recommend it. It's a horrifying read to know what young women are experiencing, particularly young girls still at school, but young women in their 20s are experiencing as they go out into the world and try and interact sexually with their peers. And it seems to me that we do need a reset, And the reset that I think we need is one that goes back to basics, reminds us of what we started out wanting, what we still want. The Minister for Women, Senator Katie Gallagher, who is just fabulous, she's launching the first government gender equity strategy. And so she's setting out what she thinks will be the terms of creating a society in which women have gender equity. Well, I actually beat her to it 7 years ago. I wrote something called the Women's Manifesto, and better title too, I think. And in that Women's Manifesto, I outlined what I consider to be the four basic principles of women's equality. And it seemed to me that if we could achieve these four principles, we would have, because everything stems from them. If we could achieve these four principles, we'd be there. We'd be equal. We'd have less to complain about, let's put it that way. So what we want is very simple. First, financial self-sufficiency. And everything that stems from that, access to education, access to decent jobs, proper pay, equal pay, access to superannuation. So all of the things that we need for financial self-sufficiency, but that is the principle that we want. Secondly, reproductive freedom. And again, all that stems from that. Fortunately, this country is not going the direction of the United States, and we are legalising abortion, not taking it away, but we have to be very vigilant that that position remains the case and that we have access to non-surgical means of abortion. We have access to appropriate medical care, and that is getting more and more expensive and more inaccessible in this country. The third principle is freedom from violence, and I don't need to tell you how important that is. I think the rise of domestic and family violence in this country over the past few decades has been one of the most shocking and shameful things that's happened in our society. Clearly, a lot of it is revenge and payback for women wanting to have their own lives. And there are a lot of things we need to do to deal with that. I think everybody in this room knows what we're talking about, so I won't go into it in any detail, but just to say it is an indispensable and basic principle of women's equality. And finally, the right to participate fully and equally in all areas of public life. And so no more toilets for members and senators, no more restrictions on women running for office. So if you are a woman in the Liberal Party trying to get free selection, all I can say is good luck. So these are the four principles of women's equality, and I think if we can achieve those, I mean, these are goals worth fighting for, we can decide which one is the most important to us and perhaps and get very involved in campaigns on that one, or we can put them all together and say this is what we want and we're going to fight for them. I did a really, what I thought was a brave, not brave, I thought this was a normal thing to do back in 2017 when I wrote this document. I thought now I'm going to set some goals for 5 years' time in order to demonstrate progress towards reaching these principles of equality. So I set out my equality goals by 2022. And I said by 2022, very boldly, we intend to have the following four significant reforms drawn from those principles. Firstly, we wanted legislated equal pay for all women in all jobs. Well, crossed against that one. Secondly, we wanted the decriminalisation of abortion in New South Wales and Queensland. Okay, big tick there. We did well there. Thirdly, we want specialist domestic violence courts in every state in Australia. Well, we've got part the way there, but we're certainly not there. And finally, we want gender quotas dictating that women make up 50% of all parliamentarians, all cabinets and other ministries and directors of all public company and government boards. Well, that didn't happen either. So my little plan, my little five-year plan for implementing the principles of women's equality hasn't got off to a great start. But I do think it is worth reviving. I think if we are going to have a reset, we have to go back to principles, we have to go back to basics, and we have to say, okay, There's a lot of things wrong. There's a lot of things that are great. We've achieved a lot. We're all here. We wouldn't have been here. There wouldn't have been a conference for women back when I was a kid. It would have been an absurd idea. There are so many wonderful things we are doing and can do. There's an enormous energy, I find, entrepreneurial energy amongst women in all sorts of areas, in employment, in research, which is where I'm now working. I'm researching on domestic violence, doing data work, finding out things that nobody else had found before. Some of you might be aware of the work I did on single mothers, which discovered that single mothers are single mothers basically because of violence, not because of the prejudices that have been used against them for so many years. We have to reset by saying, okay, these are our fundamental principles and this is what we're going to be fighting for. We have to make sure that governments understand that, and let's hope that if you agree with them, that these goals, that these principles sink. Basically, I mean, that they're just non-arguable fundamental rights, financial security, reproductive freedom, freedom from violence, and the right to fully participate in all areas of public life. I can't think of anything more normal, more reasonable, or attainable, really. And I hope you agree with me. Thank you very much.
This podcast was recorded on the land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past and present. Executive producer is Jennifer Goggin. Series producer is Holly Mitchell. And audio imaging by Nat Marshall.